Voices of the Elephant is proudly sponsored by SiteGround.com, a leader in website hosting and a terrific partner for all your website projects. Their top-notch technologies will make your websites fast and secure. Welcome to the Voices of the Elephant podcast. Each episode of Voices of the Elephant brings you an interview with a member of the PHP community. From project leaders to user group organizers, we talk to the people that are helping make the PHP community special. Welcome to another episode of Voices of the Elephant. My name is Cal Evans. I'm your host, and my special guest today is Alan McGregor. Say hi to everybody, Alan.
Hi, everyone.
Now, Alan, this is your first time here on Voices of the Elephant, so I'm going to ask you the question I ask everybody. Give us your hero backstory. How did you get into programming? And you work a lot with PHP and Magento, so how did you get into Magento?
Sure. So first, how did I get into programming? In reality, it was actually not my goal to be a software developer from the very beginning. When I was a kid, I actually wanted to be an actual architect, right? So that's my grandpa actually was an architect back in Mexico, so I was set up for that path. I started playing with computers when I was around 9 or 10 years old. And part of that, I was really deep into drafting and architectural drawing. I actually had a drafting table in my room. I was a 9, 10 year old. Around the same time, there was a lot of software packages that were coming out. We're talking around 97. There was a lot of software packages that were starting to come out for actually start doing architecture modeling with the computers, right? Hmm. So I wanted to be ahead of the curve for when I was actually going to university. So I started seeing if I could get all those packages and all that software. Unfortunately, most of the software that was coming around wasn't easily available in Mexico, especially for a 9, 10 year old with my kind of budget. So being the kind of stubborn person that I still am, I wasn't going to let something like licenses or legal software stop me. This is the truth. I'm pretty sure the status of limitation is kind of gone. So if not,
because we've all been there. Okay. You don't have to explain.
My first worries into going online into the internet and actually playing with software were all about trying to acquire those particular programs and honestly trying to crack them and get around the licenses, right? We're talking about back in the day where changing the date on the machine was enough to actually circumvent the trial periods, right? It's suddenly a year before. It's magic. So I started doing that. I started having a lot of fun with that part. I started spending more time trying to understand how the software worked and how the operating system worked. At that time it was Windows, so not much to do there. And there was a point around, I think it would be the equivalent end of high school, in the US system, where I actually want to see what programs are available for computer science. So I switched from going to from architecture to actually going and study a computer science degree. Around that time, there was a new university coming up or launching in my home city that was actually geared towards more of a practical kind of programming. So I spent 3 years working on my computer science degree. From there, being again Mexico, the choices at the time were, so you can do freelance or you can go work for a software factory where you have the next guy that's going to replace you right sitting right behind you. And I was really not a fan from that, so I started setting up all my freelance practice. I started taking WordPress at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Bit ashamed to say, but yes, I did WordPress development back in the day, and I was starting to get a lot of projects coming for e-commerce development. Around that time, when I was getting started, the options were OzCommerce and SendCart, and I think PrestaShop was not even available. WooCommerce was still not a thing.
Mm-hmm. I remember those days, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anyone that's worked with OzCommerce knows that is just spaghetti code is being kind.
I did some time with OS Commerce, but my therapist says I don't have to talk about it anymore. So
That's great. You're way ahead of me. So I did that, and I did a couple of those. I think I did about a year of that. Mm-hmm. Did a couple projects, and then I was kind of getting fed up of every project that was source commerce and certain kind of going sideways. So I started looking, okay, what else is out there? What else can I use? I have a new project. I want to make a recommendation for a client. And as it happens to be, I actually stumbled into one of the beta versions, I think, of Magento. It was, I think it was 1.0. Like, we're talking really back in the day. Hmm. And I have my Magento account number is actually 845.
Wow.
So that's how early, for what it's worth. That's how early I've been working with that. So I started taking a couple projects on Magento, getting more involved in the community. Back in the day, I was kind of the annoying guide on IRC that was just asking a bunch of stupid questions, like trying to learn the tooling. I had a couple great mentors around that time. So just in case these guys are hearing, like Binay Kopp and Lisa Ferretti, thank you guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I owe my career in Magento to those two in particular. And participating in the community. From there, I keep doing more and more contracts. And then in late 2010, I took one of my freelance clients at the time, a guy called Matt Bertulli, offered me kind of a retainer for starting like working 100% on Magento projects for them. So that was the company that I've been working on for past 8 years called DMAC Media. So I started like first 2 years remote from St. John's, Newfoundland, long story. And we started doing that for 2 years. Beginning of 2012, I moved to work full-time for them in Toronto, Canada. And I've been, a couple of things that I've done since then is I took my stab at writing a Magento book. I tried my stab at writing a self-published Magento book that wasn't that successful, but hey, at least I try. And I've been involved with the community for a long, long time. I mean, almost since the very beginning.
Now it's time for you to be a game changer with the RingCentral Developers Game Changer Program. Grow your skills, help others in the community, and get rewarded with awesome prizes like RingCentral swag, conference tickets, software, iPads, computers, and so much more. Don't just be a developer, be a game changer and join the program today. For more information, visit developers.ringcentral.com. Very cool. Now, that's a great hero backstory. I wish every time I asked that, you know, people would give me that that kind of detail. A lot of times when I ask that question, I get, 10 words. You know, I went to school. This is what I like doing. And it's like, no, that's great. It gives us some feel for who you are. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Now, let's talk a little bit, not too long ago, 6 months, 9 months now, Adobe purchased Magento. I'm not exactly sure exactly when the timeline was, but and it's been interesting to watch this and watch the community react to this. And I've seen both good and bad reactions to it. Give us your take. How is the Adobe purchase of Magento going to be positive or negative for Magento and the Magento community, specifically the open source side of things?
Yeah, that's, let me see if I can unpack that question, because that's a couple of things, right? So, I mean, there is repercussions in terms of what this means for the community, what it means for the ecosystems, like the solutions implementers and SaaS providers. There is implications for the business and the SIs or agencies that work with it. So my overall take is this is a good thing, right? So this is kind of the next stage and what needs to happen for Magento in order to continue growing as a platform and ecosystem. And at the same time, Adobe in itself has a really powerful set of tools, right? For me as an engineer, as a solution architect, as a developer, like I used to work with this small toolbox that has a couple really good tools on it and that I can bring to any project. Adobe just made that like one of those like massive like toolboxes with multiple levels and multiple rows. Like it's just a series of tools that are incredibly powerful, right? So one of the interesting things is that a lot of people that are traditionally Magento agencies and SaaS providers are still trying to wrap their head around what it means to be part of that ecosystem. And okay, so sure, cool. Adobe bought Magento. What the hell does that mean for me? It's like I'm a solution provider. I just do Magento. How's that going to change? Or I am, shipping provider SaaS, which I'm not going to name names, but I'm pretty sure we all know who I'm talking about. what the hell does that mean? And the interesting thing is like the switch that we're going to see and the switch that like as a community we need to push is like Magento is no longer about like building this very productized, very product-centric kind of experience, right? As a part of Adobe, now we're entering the age of experience-driven commerce, where it's all about providing the customer with constant personalized and immersive experiences. It's not just, I go to the website, I see the catalog that everyone has, I go through the checkout that is pretty much standard. It is with Adobe, you have things like analytics and target and personalization and campaign that are all connected through their data layer, right? So the goal that Adobe has is like every single tool on their ecosystem, which I believe there are, what, 9, 8 tools right now, the big ones, they're all connected to a single data layer. So the moment a Magento customer registers, that data is now available to the analytics platform, to the personalization platform, to the campaign product that's the one that runs all the marketing emails. So what does that mean, right? So that means that, for example, if I'm grabbing something like Adobe Experience Manager, which is kind of the best way to think about it, is like the presentation layer for any website. It's more than that. It's really, really powerful for sake of argument. And you plug in that into Magento, right? Which is one of the cool things that Bounteous, which is the company that I'm now part of, can do, is now you can tailor. The moment Cal hits, sports check or a sports store, right? We know your age, profile, gender, shopping preferences, and the homepage you're going to see and the banners that you're going to see and the promotions you're going to see are tailored to you. And wow. And it's going to be different from the one that I'm going to get on my website. When I visit the website. And furthermore, because this is the ecosystem of Adobe, the moment you go to a store or a mobile app, or you start getting ads on whatever, Facebook or whatever ads, those can be also leveraging the same type of data, the same type of functionality. So you get one single omnichannel experience that is personalized, that is rich and unique. So it's really cool. A little bit scary from the amount of data that those things are collecting and the ability to personalize, but cool at the end of the day, right? So it's going more from, okay, everyone has to have a catalog and a shop to, okay, we're going to be content and experience first with e-commerce components. Mm-hmm. Now, that might not be the cup of tea for every single person on the ecosystem. Some people are not a fan of the more enterprise kind of policies and projects and Magento switching from this being this kind of mid-market to being more of this enterprise product. Mm-hmm. And that's going to cause friction. That's inevitable. But I think is in the long scheme is actually pretty good. It's actually a good thing to see. And it's going to open a lot of opportunities for everyone in the community.
Yeah. And overall, I think it's going to be a net positive for Magento, the Adobe purchase. Early on, we saw the usual suspects panicking about how they're going to kill the open source and they're all going to go enterprise and things like that. And I'll be honest, it's really, anytime a company buys another company, they'll leave them alone for a year just to let them run the way they are. And after that first year, they start making some changes. So we really haven't gotten out of the honeymoon phase yet. But even so, I've known Adobe and I've known Adobe people working at Adobe long enough so that I've got a good feel for the company. And I don't see those that are panicking about it killing Adobe killing the open source. I don't see that happening. To me, that would be that's killing the reason they bought the company, because it's the community that really makes Magento stand out from the pack, in my view. So.
100%. That would be probably one of the worst business moves ever if they tried to do that. It's like like one of the main drivers or the main values of this community is just, of Magento is having this strong community, right? Like it's one of the reasons I love to go to Imagine. It's like going seeing family that you haven't seen in a year, right? There's the very tight-knit, strong community. And losing that would be just like you're essentially killing the product.
Yeah. Going to see family you want to see, as opposed to, you know, going to see your in-laws.
100%, yes. Thank you for making that distinction. That is very important.
Okay, hey, let's move on to our third topic. You're like me. When I ask you about your hobbies and everything, you said that you'll spend 8 or 10 hours a day at work. You'll go home and your hobby is coding.
Yep.
And you know, I started coding because I enjoyed coding. And much to my great surprise, people will pay me to do this. So I totally understand that. But you're working in a different environment. You're not doing the same thing as you were at work. You're doing functional programming with a language called Elixir. Now, I'll throw links in the show notes to that so people can look it up. But talk to us a little bit. What draws you to this, and what does this give? What kind of creative outlet does this give you that you're not getting from other languages?
All right. Yes. So I started kind of going into the rabbit hole of functional programming and Elixir because I was chasing a different idea called flow-based programming, right? Flow-based programming is essentially this concept of a program is a series of black boxes that are all connected, and they have a expected and known input and output, right? So it's a way of breaking down complex business rules into a series of connected functions, a sort of a idea. So why did I start looking into that is because, as it happens, e-commerce, like the main thing that we end up doing is trying to grab the unique business rules and convert that into like, okay, this is the custom part that we have to code. And that's where the room for mistakes. And again, I don't know if I can curse on the podcast, so I'm trying to stay away. Like normally I have a pretty horrid language, but so I was trying to look for a solution to that. And I went to this rabbit hole and started getting more familiar with the language Elixir. And it has some really cool capabilities. Like one of the things that I did last year, I built this very small service that its job is to provide real-time pricing through WebSockets. Hmm. And it's a very tiny, like you can write very tiny pieces of code that have a lot of business logic that operate like, okay, we're gonna retrieve a bunch of information from the customer from the session, pass that through a series of transformations, retrieve some data, and we're gonna return what we think is the best price for that person. Hmm. Tiny program, maybe I spent like 30 hours worth of work. Right now, without any problems, without any issues in performance, I can put about 170,000 requests per minute against that. And it's tiny. And the toolkit that comes like with Elixir, you can do things like, okay, there's a new version. We're going to either do a minor fix or a major release. You can do what is called hot updates. So I can deploy the code, say the service, okay, now you're going to load from this version of the code without actually interrupting anything. So in terms of deployment and availability and stability, it's like, okay, this is really, really, really cool. So for me, the creative outlet there is, okay, this is technology that I, in a daily basis, I don't have an opportunity to play with. I'm learning a couple of stuff. I'm borrowing some ideas that I might be able to apply to my day to day. So why not?
Very cool. Well, like I said, I'll throw a link in the show notes to Elixir so that other developers can get a feel for it. I know enough about functional programming to know that it's not something that is interesting to me. That doesn't mean it's bad or wrong or anything. It's just not the way I enjoy coding. So, but I've got my good friend Larry Garfield. And up in Chicago is big into functional programming, and he does a lot of it in PHP, and he'll talk about it a lot at conferences. So you know, I've learned enough through osmosis with Larry to understand what it is. Hey, Alan, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us here today on Voices of the Elephant. It has been a thrill to sit here and listen to you talk about how you got into programming, and the whole Magento and Adobe thing is still unfolding. We're going to see how things go, but it was just great talking to you about that. I want to thank you for taking some time to be with us here, listen to me and Alan, and I hope to see you next week right here on Voices of the Elephant. Thanks for listening to Voices of the Elephant. Voices of the Elephant is copyright EICC Incorporated and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives, Share and Share Alike license. To nominate someone to be a guest on Voices of the Elephant, visit our website and click on the nominate link. The URL is voicesoftheelephant.com. Elephant is, of course, spelled ELEPHPANT.